there, and thanks for joining me on the podcast today. Part two on why we have so much crime in our cities and in our homes. What's the answer to this dilemma? The mounting crime is just skyrocketing and out of control and disturbing and distressing to all of us. What's going on? Why do we have so much crime in our communities and in our homes today? Now, we've always had crime, but lately the crime rate, percentages of crime of various kinds, have significantly increased, not declined. There has been decline over time, and there's been increase over time. But now we're in an increased level of crime in our country at all levels. Why? What's going on? Well, in part one, I made the assertion that crime is really the domain of sociology and psychology, not politics. It's the sociologist, it's the psychologist that studies crime, studies the basis of crime, the reasons for crime, and proposes ways in which crime can be brought under control, or curtailed, or eliminated in some cases. Now here's how it works, or here's how it should work, okay? This is part two now, but this is how it should work. A sociologist and a psychologist should come together and answer the question, why do we have crime? Well, we did. We've answered that. One of the reasons, as I said in the first part of the program, fatherless homes. Fathers have abandoned children. Fathers have allowed mothers to just handle the kids by themselves and have to work and live a life of independence and keep a house up and all by herself. Fathers have abandoned our kids. And because of that, we have more crime. Mother can't handle it. She can't control it all. Dad is living a life of crime, perhaps himself. Kids imitate that, and it goes on and on and on. So, here's the deal. When a psychologist and a sociologist comes up with a answer to why we have so much crime, it then becomes the politician's responsibility to set a program in place to carry out an answer to the problem of crime based on what the psychologists and the sociologists have found to be true. So in this example, what can the politicians at the city level, the state level, the country level, the national level, what can our politicians do to get father back in the home? What can our politicians do to get father to stay in the home? What can our politicians do to get father, if he does leave the home, to at least maintain contact with his kids and be responsible for his kids, even if he's out of the home? How can you get father back in the home part-time? That's the level of responsibility for politicians. It's taking what a psychologist and a sociologist have found to be true and come up now with a social political answer to that problem so that the problem is diminished. Fathers are back in the home. Fathers are being responsible. Fathers are taking responsibility. And kids are following in a better path than they would have otherwise. Okay, that's how it works. That's the formula that we need to undertake. Now, in part one, I identified several causes for the increased crime. I recommend that you go back and listen to part one about 2-3 days ago. Now I'd like to go to part two. Why do we have so much crime? Well, long time ago, many states, not all, but many states, took the death penalty away. No more death penalty. That was a message. Not that the death penalty was the great answer to crime, but it's an attitude. It says that we have a tolerance for crime when we take the death penalty away. There are crimes that are committed that we have tolerance for, as compared to crimes that are committed for which we have no tolerance. It's an attitude that prevails in a city or in a country when the death penalty is removed. Maybe you don't use it very much, but it's there to be used under certain conditions, and maybe that's part of the answer why we have so much crime. It's the attitude of tolerance that prevails in those states where the death penalty has been eliminated, removed. Okay, here's another reason. I call it gang power. Gang power. Cities are overrun with gangs, and they have tremendous power. They have power on kids who have nothing to do. They have power of kids who are looking for a father, looking for an authority figure, looking for an adult, looking for somebody to hang out with, looking for somebody to tell them what to do, entertain them after school, entertain them in the neighborhood, entertain them on weekends. Gangs are there to do that. And gangs have enormous power. and our government is not addressing the issue of gangs. Now, our last president, Mr. Trump, did try to address the issue of gangs, and he attacked the MS-13. We don't have that today. So we have gone soft on crime in the terms of gang crime. So gang crime is powerful in our cities. And unless we address gangs and put them on the list of hate organizations, we're not going to get very far. That's where gangs belong. Their identity needs to be on the list of hate organizations. And then law enforcement treats them differently. Okay, here's another one. Leaders in our country, maybe not annoyingly, I'm not sure, but they give permission to crime. Vice President Harris, last summer, went and paid the bail for people who were arrested in the uprising in the streets in Florida and other places. She paid their bail. That's giving permission to kids to commit crime when somebody comes along and pays your bail. It's what parents have done over the years. Let the kid off the hook. He gets arrested. Parents go down and get him out of jail. And crime goes on. As compared to leaving the kid in jail and letting him experience the jail experience. And Harris did the same thing. By her paying for the bail, she gave leadership permission for more crime in our country. Now here's another one. Little punishment for kids going through the court system for the first time. Now we know that crime starts at age 11. We know that there's a crime behavior, crime mentality that builds from grade 11 to 12, from age 11 to 12 to 13 and 14. And kids show up in court for committing crime at that age level. And we have not treated them tough. We have not responded to them in a tough manner. We've given options and we've given tolerance and we've allowed kids to just walk off and walk away with a lecture of saying, do no more. We need to be very tough on the budding process of crime. The kids that are in crime for the very first time, we need to make sure that they have a very firm criminal experience in the court. So they'll get their attention, get the parents' attention, and do things that are corrective, do things which are rehabilitative for the kid who commits the crime, for the parents of that kid, and for the victim of that kid. In other words, we aren't addressing the total issue. We put a kid on probation. We need to be putting that home on probation, putting the parents on probation along with the kid, and make them go to classes, make them go to therapy, make them go to school, make them go to a learning experience of some kind of rehabilitation, drug treatment together, or whatever. We're not doing that. Here's another one. Sometimes there's no treatment to kids whatsoever. Sometimes we don't even put a kid into a treatment program. He comes to court, he's put on probation, or he's put on some terms of behavior to show up at a certain court at a certain time and account for his behavior. We need kids in treatment. When they start the criminal behavior pattern, the only hope is to get that kid into the pathway of treatment and keep him there throughout his adolescent years. Keep him there not for 3 months or for 1 year. Keep him in that path of rehabilitation and treatment for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And make sure that we have accountability and we have learning experiences going on. And that a kid might not only have treatment, but he might have to enroll in 3 or 4 different treatment programs during the course of the next 2 or 3 years. A drug treatment program, an alcohol treatment program, a mental health treatment program, a school education enrichment program, a reading program, and so on and so on. The kid needs to have a cadre of opportunities to change his behavior. We need to do that at the level of probation and the level of first criminal action. And we need a social news outlet that starts teaching us and showing us in the newspapers and on television and various places good examples of good behavior of good kids. We need to honor our kids who are doing well. We need to put them out as an example. We need to put them out as a model. This is the way to behave. Find the kids that are successful. Find the kids that are breaking the crime cycle, getting out of the addiction pattern, getting out of the gangs, getting out of crime. We need to honor those kids and put them out forward and let our communities rally around those kids and support them and learn from them. They're models, they're examples to us. We need to have that kind of model. Now, here's the last thing. California. Last year, under Governor Brown, enacted a program called the Diversion Program. The Diversion Program was simply this, that if you have committed crime, and now there are certain crimes that were excluded, but if you committed a crime, you can apply to be in the Diversion Program. The Diversion Program is this, you don't go to jail, you aren't charged, but that you're placed in a probation program for 2 years, and you must be in treatment for 2 years. Treatment might involve anger management, it might involve a drug addiction treatment, it might involve psychotherapy, it might involve some kind of a social learning behavior, such as learning how to be assertive, learn how to make decisions, communicate. Classes and groups and lessons are to be provided. Parenting classes for those that have kids. All kinds of rehabilitation options are available and are permissible. The important thing is, whatever the kid needs to divert him from any more crime, give him those treatment programs and follow him for 2 years, see how well he does. Now, I have had probably about 15 or 20 of these kids in the diversion program. It's just new, so many of them have not finished the program. But I have finished the program with some of them, and they're successful. This is a good program. This is a good opportunity. This is a good choice. This is a good option for our kids today. We don't need kids to be in jail necessarily. They don't learn anything there. They learn more bad behavior. But what we do need are these kids that are criminals or are beginning to be criminals in treatment programs of various kinds, and we need to develop treatment programs for them. And then make those available and bring that kid around over the course of the next 2 years. And that program is workable. Now, that isn't done in all states. That's done in some states. It's done in California. It's a great program, the Diversion Program. So I recommend that. So if you live in a state that does not have a diversion program, tell your legislator to check it out in California and run a bill through your state legislature and get that to be a program in your state for your kids, and cut the crime rate through the diversion program that you offer kids today. So there you are. This is part two. Why do we have crime? Why do we have so much crime? Why do we have crime in our cities? Why do we have crime in our homes? Well, we have it because we're not addressing it. We have it because we're not stopping it. We have it because we're not redirecting it. We have it because we are not corralling those that commit crime and help them change their lives. We have it because we're not addressing the crime behavior. We're talking about it, but we're not addressing it. We need to do it in our schools. We need to do it in our homes. We need to do it in our social programs. We need to do it in our churches. We need to do it throughout the community. We need to address this issue together in the community. Stop crime, and stop it in the young, early years as much as possible. So there you are. This is part two. Thanks for being with me on why have so much crime in our communities, in our homes. There's an answer to that. So when the sociologists and the psychologists come together and answer the question about crime in the community, then suggestions can be made to the politicians, who then can develop programs and pay for programs and provide for programs that will change the course of events of the kids who are in the criminal behavior pathway. We need to address it together, and we can do our part by encouraging our legislators to get on board and to do it with us. Anyway, nice to have you with me, and thanks, and bye for now.